I'm Hannah Young, and you're listening to The Caring Economy with Toby Usnick, sponsored by Philanthropic Impact.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are in the world today, welcome back to The Caring Economy with me, Toby Usnick. Today, we have a remarkable guest. It's Scott Kern, the CEO of Beyond Advisors and the former general counsel inside the Clinton Foundation. We'll be delving into his inspiring career trajectory, exploring the profound role of purpose in his life and work, and extracting invaluable pearls of wisdom, as we always do on this show, that he's gathered along the way. Moreover, we'll discuss his perspective on the role of business in shaping society for the better. Scott Kern is no stranger to the world of conscious business and ethical leadership. As the CEO of Beyond Advisors, a pioneering firm known for advising the biggest social impact organizations and initiatives in the world today, including the Margaret Casey Foundation, the Clinton Foundation, the Starbucks Foundation, the Walt Disney Birthplace, and on and on and on, Scott has dedicated his career to providing that doing well and doing good are not mutually exclusive. Under his leadership, Beyond Advisors has stood as a beacon for aligning organizational success with social responsibility. So with no further ado, welcome to The Caring Economy, Scott.
Thanks so much, Toby. What a pleasure to be with you.
So we always ask our guests at the beginning of the show to give us, they all have such an accomplished life as you do, to give us like a 2-3 minute digest of your narrative, kind of where you're born, how you found your way, any sort of pivots or moments that really were seminal for you.
Yeah, sure. It's one of my favorite stories, the story of how I got where I am today. I grew up in a pretty typical and traditional suburban Chicago background, went straight from high school to undergrad, undergrad to law school, and found myself 24 years old and practicing corporate law. It was interesting. That alone was interesting because I was one of those people who went to law school but never planned to actually become a traditional lawyer. So I was always looking for what the something else might be. I never did the backpacking across Europe or the wild, you know, year off or adventure anywhere else. And so I always sort of had a part of my mind thinking that this is not what I would do forever and that there was something more out there for me. And so remaining curious in that way was a huge part of not only that time in my life, but the through line that would follow and that continues today even. Within that 5-year period though, I really, you know, immersed myself in practicing law and it was pretty awesome. It was great to learn. I was in a mid-sized corporate firm and it was really cool because I got to see across multiple different practice areas. But after about 5 years, on a bit of a whim that's another story of its own, I applied to, didn't think I'd get into, got into, didn't think I'd go, and then went back to grad school. And I pivoted out of corporate law in Chicago and moved to Arkansas, of all places, to join the inaugural class of the University of Arkansas Clinton School of Public Service and get the nation's first ever master's degree in public service. I was the 8th presidential school. Most people are familiar with the Kennedy School of Government and others like it. This was the Clinton School of Public Service offering the nation's first master's in public service. So I thought, well, that seems like a good idea. Worst case scenario, I can always go back and practice law. So I went. And that became an adventure. I went to Arkansas for 18 months, stayed for 5 years, wound up buying a house, having a kid, getting a couple dogs. My wife and I worked, you know, she worked remotely from Arkansas for, started in 18 months, went on 5 years. And wound up in global philanthropy, unexpectedly, but delightfully. And I was at the brand new foundation of the most recent and at the time youngest former president in history, and got a foot in the door as a 31-year-old intern and then a 1-year fellowship. And over the next 10 years, I would take on a legal title once again and wound up departing in 2015-2016 in the role of general counsel. So I went from accidentally starting the legal department one day to leaving it with a team of 16 people in the midst of the much publicized 2016 presidential election. And when I left the organization, I did not know exactly where I was going to go next. I was not a huge fan of most consultants or consulting firms. because I'd seen a lot of them come in with the best of intentions, but not always with the best of outcomes. And so I was certainly not open to the idea of consulting, but lo and behold, life throws us curveballs and the unexpected should become the expected. And I started a consulting firm with the theory of the case that what we had done over the decade I was at the Clinton Foundation could be valuable to other nonprofits, social enterprises, and private sector social impact initiatives. And for the past 8 years, have been running a social impact consulting firm called Beyond Advisors.
I'm not surprised given your legal training and your passions. I'm smiling a bit when you say about other consulting firms, because I know some of them's like the Teneos of the world. And, you know, you can have great rosters of alumni from administrations, and yet sometimes it just feels like they're another big organization and maybe not as rooted in the purpose that you are in your work. So I'm not going to put you on the spot there and ask you that, if you agree or disagree. Well, but
no, I do. And look, I say it respectfully because ours is a boutique consulting firm. We're a very small firm, right? If you needed, I always draw the parallels. Like if you need the whole Navy, you need to call the Bains, the Bridgespan, McKinsey social sector practices. But if you need a Navy SEAL team, that's where we come in, right? So we are a small tactical group that does a very narrow and specific set of services for our clients. It's expanded a bit as we've gotten larger and gotten more experienced and realized the value of what we can contribute. Yeah. But look, I think big consulting firms have their place and there's plenty of organizations that need them and they deliver incredible value to most of their clients. I'm not disparaging their services at all, but not all clients are ready to advance the product. Right. But I knew that when we started a consulting firm, I wanted to be sure we were offering cost competitive, really tactical, really practical, usable tools so that our clients are materially better when we're done than when we started, and not just leaving them with a PowerPoint and $100,000 bill.
Can you give us a couple of examples maybe of how Beyond Advisors is brought in and the kinds of services that you offer?
Sure. And I'll start with a framework for ease of understanding, which is that, you know, I was leaving a general counsel role of one of the world's largest, fastest growing, and unquestionably most scrutinized nonprofits, right? The Clinton Foundation endured a 2-year Category 5 hurricane of scrutiny during the 2015-2016 timeframe. And it withstood it. It's still doing its great work today. Mm-hmm. I sometimes joke and say, you know, we withstood this scrutiny and I'm not in jail, so it held up okay. because none of the rumor and innuendo that came with getting turned into a political football, which is what happened, was true. We knew whose name was on the door the whole time, and 2016 wasn't the first presidential election we dealt with. There was a 2008 unsuccessful run for the presidency as well, and it was just a great nonprofit. I mean, it really was. I'm super proud of the work we did there. My idea when leaving was like, we've had this great blessing, this embarrassment of riches of the best advisors in the world, legal, finance, big consulting, social impact, philanthropic program, board, operations. And our job was to take it all in, aggregate it, synthesize it, make it easy to understand and make it easy for our colleagues to use. And so my thought was, that's like playing in an all-star game for 10 years. And our program work ran the gamut from global health to climate change, early child education, women and girls, childhood obesity, international development, you name it, we were working on it. That was a heck of a toolkit. And I thought that toolkit might be valuable elsewhere. And while I didn't necessarily create it, I did curate it. And our team curated it for ease of understanding and even easier use among our colleagues. And I thought, this shouldn't die on my hard drive. This shouldn't just be plugged into one more nonprofit. This shouldn't just go to one place or one cause. This should be out there for everybody who can benefit from it. And so that's truly what gave rise to the program work or the work that we do at Beyond Advisors. And sometimes, to answer your question directly, sometimes clients come to us because they're struggling with a board issue. And that board issue might fall in the categories of board growth or board development, right? Stale board needs to grow into a more active and engaged board, or engagement. We have a disengaged board. We want to make more engaged. And so that could be one example, or really three examples, of what we might do in one part of an organization, the board. Others might bring us in to help with operations. Most of the time that falls around human resources, right? Because unless and until AI and the robots take over, it's still people running most of these parts. And so people are the most important and most important to manage well resources in any organization. And we had a ton of HR experience with 4,000 staff and volunteers in 40 countries and 35 states. We had seen an awful lot of HR. And for all the scrutiny we got, you never really saw any material failures of HR. So I thought we might have a pretty good HR toolkit here. And we did. Credit the teams that helped us build that, credit the HR team that refined it in-house. And we got to sit alongside them and learn some of that. So HR is very, very common, right? How do you hire people in the right category, the right way, for the right position, compliant with the law? And then how do you engage them, manage them, and continue to manage them over time? Because sometimes performance is great and sometimes performance isn't so great. So some clients bring us in on the HR side. Others bring us in for program development, because we've really had an incredible opportunity in our careers, the collective career now, to see almost every type of initiative. And I use that word on purpose, right? Because it's not always a nonprofit initiative. Sometimes it is. Right. And that nonprofit initiative has to serve a charitable purpose. Sometimes it's a for-profit initiative at a corporate client with either an embedded social purpose or with a corresponding corporate foundation. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those foundations are grant makers, and sometimes those foundations are operating foundations. And so whatever and sometimes, by the way, they're social enterprises, which are actually a legal entity designed to do good and do well at the same time with the right balance. And so when we say our clients bring us in for a program support piece, we never know all necessarily what kind it'll be, because nonprofits are acting more like businesses than ever before. Businesses are acting more like nonprofits than ever before. Sometimes they're working together, and then sometimes they're a true social enterprise. So it's always fun to come in and help a client achieve those objectives, not knowing necessarily what their combination will be. And then other times they bring us in for partnership purposes, and those partnerships, again, can be expansively defined. Sometimes those are donors in the traditional nonprofit sense, grant makers or the like. Sometimes they're large numbers of donors if they're a publicly supported charity, with some combination of grant partners or program partners. Mm-hmm. And then other times it's their implementing partners. It could be two businesses trying to achieve a social good together. And so board, operations, programs, and partnerships, it's a four-part acronym that's kind of fun. I've coined it to the BOP acronym, and I invite everybody to become a BOPtimist, because you can pretty much find all the great work in those four categories. And so our clients can bring us in for one or more of those categories. Some clients bring us in for all four.
Okay. So that's really helpful. I like the BOPism. When we think about the private sector and philanthropists, donors, but more particularly businesses led by executives, mm-hmm. How might you be working with them to integrate more purpose into their business model?
In really exciting and awesome ways. And I give them credit, because they're usually only finding us and we're coming to them after they've already either made that decision to do that or are already doing it and looking to take it to a new level. So we work primarily with growth stage initiatives. Meaning not usually in the startup space and not usually in the crisis space. And I can unpack that if it's helpful. But we're dealing with people who already know purpose matters and are finding them at some point on the journey. Some may be earlier than others, and others may be looking to innovate based on what they've already learned. Mm-hmm. And so the first and most important thing is for any and all of us, we start all of our work, and I encourage every person I meet, and I meet a lot of people who want to have more impact in their life and or in their work. And I always say, start where you are with what you have. So if a business is coming to us and saying, hey, we'd love for you to help us take this initiative to a new level, or look at this issue at this unique period of time, and I can give examples of each, if helpful, we say, well, where are you today? Show us what your footprint looks like. We don't spend a lot of time on that. I'd love to get that answer in a minute or less. Some people will take 3 months to do due diligence and explore all the aspects of it. I want to know right away, how do you do good today? And every single individual and every single organization does. We sometimes overlook many of the ways in which we do good, either in our individual mm-hmm. lives or our work. So I always want to look at that footprint and find out what they're doing. If somebody's calling us and asking us for help, they probably already have a pretty good sense of what that looks like mm-hmm. and why they're calling us for help. And so we'll start where they are and guide them where they want to go. We always tell clients, we do with clients. We can't do for clients, because they have to go forward. Like any good consultant should know, you want to lead your client better than you found them. So our question is, what are you doing today? And then connecting that immediate sort of status quo with, where do you want to be when we're done? And how do you want the world to be different? What needs
to be? How do you bridge that between the two states? Yep.
Yeah. And that's where the magic lies, right? Because that's where the initiative work is. That's where the program work is. That's where the partners are and the roles that they play. And so, you know, Ray Dalio and Tony Robbins did a great podcast on this a couple of years ago that I continue to go back to regularly, because they talked about what the world's leading visionaries have in common. And it is that meticulous bookend of an excruciatingly clear understanding of what the status quo is and a crystal clear vision of what they're trying to achieve. And they unpack some amazing examples in that podcast. I highly recommend it. But that is the magic.
Can you give us an example of, maybe it can be a client that's now completed and satisfied, or it can be one you're working on, but
I'll give you one. Very large foundation, $1 billion plus in assets, big mover, big shaker in the philanthropic grant world, just on the board. They had a new CEO who had discovered a board that had some stagnation. And, you know, respectfully, there, they had a lot of stagnation on the board, and they have had a fervent belief at the time and still do now that philanthropy needs to continue to iterate, if not completely reinvent itself, because as anybody who's turned on the news knows, we're facing some very difficult challenges in the world, and philanthropy has an opportunity to step up, especially big philanthropy with big resources, a big stage, big profile, big spotlight. So the question they asked us is, how can you help us under the confines of the current board, respecting all existing board members, their membership, their terms, et cetera? How do we get them where they need to be? And so we came in and did some really surgical work with them to understand what was possible to help the existing board engage better. Remember I talked, there's three components of great healthy boards in our Beyond Simple take, which is growth, development, and engagement. All three of those things can happen at different times in different ways. How can you take an existing board and help them engage more? And we looked at opportunities to develop that board further. Then when it came to long-term growth and development, we looked at the ways in which they could use board recruitment to change. They have since recruited rock stars, household names to be on their board to replace board members who were leaving. They were also able, just by virtue of that engagement piece, to bring along existing board members who were probably readily able to admit that the board was stagnant, but didn't mean to, right? Nobody means to stagnate a board. They thought they were doing the best they could. By engaging those board members in different ways, they came alive. And so they really had the best of both worlds. And while that might seem like a really technical behind the scenes piece that isn't very exciting, every single one of our nation's 1.8 million nonprofits is required to have a board, and the buck stops with that board. So boards are the beginning and the end of every great nonprofit. So engaging them really, really matters. And so that was one example. Another example on the program side, a little more tangible for people who speak well, what are they doing? I'm going to anonymize this to protect the client's confidentiality, but an extremely high profile household name, beverage company, with stores on almost every corner you can find, came to us after a period of not engaging consultants for a while. And it was during the beginning middle of the pandemic. And the question they asked us was, can you help us think through what the highest and best purpose of our corporate foundation should be amidst this pandemic, with a focus on two key stakeholders, first mile and last mile stakeholders. First mile were the growers of their product in countries around the world. Last mile were the people who owned and operated their stores and the communities in which those stores were located. What an awesomely fun project, right? Because you're literally looking at the bookends of the life cycle of the product with a sincere commitment by this corporate entity that, you know, a lot of people love to disparage corporate America. I'm not one of them.
No, because they
are part of the solution, and they are doing more than most anybody realizes. And it's easy to love to hate them, but it's better to try to work with them and to realize what they're doing and the ways in which they can be motivated, and often are excited to be motivated by their stakeholders to do more good, better every day in all the ways possible. And this is what that entity was trying to do. And it was a really fun engagement to you know, during a difficult time. Obviously there's nothing fun about a pandemic, but it's pretty awesome to have a corporate entity say, hey, we'd love to add some thought partnership to our internal process to try to figure out how we show up to support these two key communities of stakeholders. And in the middle of it, George Floyd happened. The world pivoted again on a different axis, certainly here in the United States. And they're now saying, how do we deal with this in these sort of twin challenges of a global pandemic, rightful, understandable civic upheaval in the United States, where someone was killed in broad daylight on camera by the police. And people are rightfully scared, upset, and angry about it. And we want to be a good corporate citizen in the process. Can we add that to the process of what we're working on together? And boy, you know, business falls away really quick when you're thinking about solving those challenges. And that's the heart of great social impact work, regardless of sector, whether it's in the nonprofit piece of the corporate foundation, whether it's in the for-profit piece of the corporate entity, whether it's how we do business or how we show up each day in the communities we care about that are facing real challenges. That's two examples of how we showed up to help clients, but it's also how we are inspired by the clients we've served and the clients that we seek to continue to serve in their work, because boy, does that work matter.
Ladies and gentlemen, again today on The Caring Economy, we have with us as a guest Scott Kern. He is the CEO of Beyond Advisors, a pioneering firm known for advising the biggest social impact organizations of our days. I wonder, Scott, if you might say a little bit about the polarization going on and the accusations of woke or not woke. I can't think of any topic today that someone can't polarize and push to sides, whether it's the media or politicians or others. How do you advise your clients about whether to, so to speak, go there or not?
Yeah, it's a great question and an important one at this time, right? And everybody's grappling with it at different times in different ways for fair reasons. I think it's fine for people to ask any question they want to, and I think it's great for people to have a position on it. You know, we live in a world of Citizens United, which says that corporate entities have a voice. So while I don't regularly wear my attorney hat every day, I still always have that experience and filter. What I'll say is, for those who are suggesting that woke versus anti-woke is good public service, I encourage them to read Citizens United, which they love at certain times, but seem to throw out at other times, because either corporations have a voice or they don't. Right. Either it's protected or they don't. And, you know, to put a fine point on it, I don't think Ron DeSantis has a politics problem. I think Ron DeSantis has a public service problem that politics is interfering with, because I wish I could have talked to him before he decided to go to a public battle with the largest employer in his state and one of his biggest taxpayers, which employs an awful lot of the citizens he as governor has an obligation to represent, each and every one of them. He doesn't only represent the ones who voted for him, and he doesn't represent the ones who agree with him. He represents all of the people in the state of Florida, including those who are employed by the company he seems intent on being in battle with. It doesn't make sense to me from a public service perspective. Mm-hmm. Because whether you agree with one issue or another in the ESG landscape, it's when you start breaking each of them down, they matter to the people who pay taxes. They matter to the people who vote. They matter to the people who are employed by those corporate entities. So I think as a matter of public service, you want to represent everyone. And I think not driving cultural division is ideal for good public service. Finding common ground where we can agree is really good public service. So on one hand, I think that it's a little misleading to be woke or anti-woke as a matter of public service as an elected representative. And I think those folks in that industry need to revisit the role of public service and remind themselves when politics is not necessarily good for public service, and especially for their constituents, because it's really tough. And they should really reconcile it with existing case law they otherwise champion, because they have a real problem there. One important point is to follow the trend line over the headline. Bill Clinton loves to say, follow the trend lines, not the headlines. We can be distracted easily by the headlines of being woke or anti-woke, or even the acronym ESG, and being either for or against or afraid of it in business and in public service. But the trend lines are that this isn't going anywhere. ESG by any other name might be CSR. Right. It might be public service. It might be what I would call social impact. So I don't get caught up too much on the acronyms of the day or how people feel about one or the other. I believe that social impact and public service has been a part of human history since the beginning of modern mankind. And I think it always will be. So I think regardless of the acronym people use or the headline that people want to use to attack that acronym, public service isn't going anywhere and it shouldn't. The fact that people care about the environment, the fact that people care about social issues, and the fact that people care about good governance, ES and G, isn't going to change whether we use the acronym front and center or not. And so I would encourage people to follow the trend lines and the long game, that social impact and public service always matters. Markets care about it more than ever. Consumers care about it more than ever. And talent care about it more than ever. So if you want to be a competitive business in the world today, if you want to be an appealing public servant and or politician, you should really care about social impact and public service, regardless of what acronym is being used.
Right. I often coach people not to think about the alphabet soup, but just the purpose behind it. And that's why, I mean, the book, the podcast, The Caring Economy is about that. It's about caring. And as you know, caring is an active verb. It's not passive, right? You either demonstrate through your actions and your deeds and your words what you do or don't care about. And that's what, as you say, the employees, the shareholders, the larger public are tuning into. So when it comes to coaching or engaging with your clients, I think that it's not for the faint of heart these days, because it is so polarizing and highly visible when a company makes a commitment on anything from, you know, Colin Kaepernick and Nike, or this past couple of weeks with the tragedy in Israel and in Gaza. So I think part of the messaging has to be, you really need to think this through thoroughly with all of your stakeholders and know that this is core to your brand and what you want to do, because there will always be blowback. And when there's blowback, do you, a la Dylan Mulvaney and Bud Light, sort of throw the spokesperson out with the bathwater, or do you double down? Bob Iger came back to Disney and doubled down and is prevailing. And, you know, Nike, I think, ultimately prevailed with Colin Kaepernick. But would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, corporate voice is a real thing. It's a real thing in every part of our society right now. And I think, you know, consumer demand and talent are voting with their dollars and with their service and where they choose to spend their days and or their dollars. And so there's no denying it. And I have yet to meet a single business that doesn't understand that reality, and that there are people who are making their decisions where to work based on corporate voice and position. There are products and services that are being purchased based on the same. There is capital being put into markets in the form of investments based on the same. And there's no denying it. You can put out all the headlines you want. You can foment a culture war with corporate entities all you like. It doesn't change the reality. Markets, capital, products, and consumers are motivated more now by purpose than ever before. And those who are winning tend to prioritize their corporate purpose and the impact.
Identify it. Absolutely. Just even identifying it is a start. I think you're probably friendly with, as I am, with Richard Edelman, and the whole Edelman Trust Barometer is very much about that, how it's the corporates that are being more trusted now than often our elected officials or media. So I don't see that trend line, using yours and the president's reference. I don't see that trend line abating. And I think it's a good thing. It's also why I believe that, you know, better to be working for me, someone like me, working with the private sector, because the talent pool, the bench strength, the depth of the pockets for applying resources is just that much greater and faster paced, actually, metabolically than the other parts of the economy, although they all matter. Two questions. One is about the Gen Zs and the millennials. How are you factoring them into your presentations and the way you're both engaging with your clients, but also maybe even how you're recruiting there at Beyond?
Yeah, you know, they all everybody matters. All the talent and all of their desire and focus on impact and how they want to show up and how they interpret the world in which the rest of us show up really matters. And, you know, these devices we keep in our pockets and or have on our desktops connect us to each other like we never have before. And so they foster greater understanding of our motivations and desires and the need for each of us to show up. And I don't think, you know, I don't think it's exclusive to the younger generations to care about impact. I often cite that some of the third act players with whom I'm close, who have led global law firms, which are multi-billion dollar businesses of their own, advising other multi-billion dollar businesses, are some of the greatest, most committed, you know, social impact leaders, social justice warriors, you name it. They are people who've lived this their whole career. And what I love about it is when you see those people connect with Gen Zers, it's magic. And when you see them both working together, you know, the boundaries break down instantly. So I don't love putting any one generation on either side of the spectrum in one bucket. I love the fact that the more we all put out our energy for purpose and impact and service, the more that vibe attracts those people into our world and sort of the barriers between us fall down. The more traditional businesses with which I have worked, and again, I work with people who come to us who are already sort of sold on it, I work with the skeptics, but it is often the case that there are skeptics among them. And so the question comes up. And, you know, you can't deny the fact if you are recruiting great talent or raising great capital, it's asking these questions. Talent is asking about impact more than ever before. My wife has been the hiring partner of her very large law firm. And there has never been a single day she has done recruitment where there is not a conversation at the end of the day about the questions being asked by top tier talent about how their firm shows up as an impact leader. By the way, in the little ecosystem of law firms, if their only answer is pro bono, they're in trouble.
Yeah.
Because the talent is asking about way more than that. They want to know about their social impact footprint beyond pro bono. Yeah. They want to know about how they're going to be inserted. They want to know how the law firm itself shows up every day, in every office, in every geographic location, everywhere around the world. Yeah. This is also true for the HR leaders of the Fortune 500 writ large. And it's interesting because there's great leaders out there who champion this very vocally, right? The Business Roundtable, Jamie Dimon, years ago said, stakeholder capitalism matters in addition to shareholder.
Absolutely.
They didn't say one's replacing the other. They say they both matter.
Yeah.
Right.
Or Larry Fink as well.
Yeah. That's exactly.
Opposite sides of the same coin, purpose and profit are inextricably linked, and we need to be pragmatic about it. What are your pearls of wisdom that you've gleaned in life about having a purposeful driven life, a purposeful driven career? What words of wisdom might you share with our listeners and audience?
The first and most important one is too easily overlooked, and so not often visited enough, which is the same thing I mentioned in response to another question you asked, which is start where you are with what you have. It matters. You have an impact every day in every way, in every almost every choice you make, right? Purchasing power, even at a low level, rounding up for charity at checkout. Almost all of us are faced with that daily. I was faced with it twice today, and it's only 2 p.m. my time. Walking your dog around the park and making a conscious choice to pick up every piece of trash you see has an impact. It makes a difference in the world we're in. But moreover, putting that overlay in front of your own eyes every day will make you feel good and it'll help you keep going. If you go to work, ask your employer, if you haven't already, about employee matching programs, if they'll match what you give, and no matter at whatever level it might be. If you have other impact initiatives wherever you may work, opt into those, ask about them. If you're a service provider like I am and you work with other clients, ask them how they're showing up and having a great impact every day. These things cost nothing but a tiny amount of time. So start where you are with what you have. Secondly, stay curious. Insatiable curiosity is what took me out of corporate law and put me on a path to being in global philanthropy and ultimately helped me achieve a really cool position at a really cool organization at a really fun time, which is what led me to doing the work I do today, that I wake up every single day rocket fueled to pursue. I don't have to do anything. I get to do it all. And when you shift that mindset of what you have to do is what you get to do and what that means about the day, it all becomes an amazing opportunity. So shift in perspective, realize you're doing more than you think you are. Take that inventory and give yourself credit. Celebrate those wins, small and large, because momentum begets momentum. The smaller ones become bigger ones. And then stay curious and find more opportunities. There's a great quote I'd love to leave you with.
Please.
It's not my own. There are no passengers on spaceship Earth. We are all crew. Every single one of us and what we do with our days, with our dollars, with our time, talent, and treasure, it really matters. And so absorb that and know that, that you're part of the crew. We're all passing through. We're only here for a period of time. It doesn't take long to live a life. There's a lot of axioms like that, that a lot of famous people have said over and over again, and it's all true.
Yeah.
So how we show up every day really matters.
I love that quote also because I say to people, it's like a roller coaster. I don't have a crystal ball where the ups and downs will take us. But I do know you're only going to get one ride. So you might as well make it a more fun, adventurous one than woe is me kind of one. So Scott Curran, the CEO of Beyond Advisors, thank you for joining us today on The Caring Economy. And we look forward to having you back and following your success.
Thank you so much, Toby.
Thank you for listening to The Caring Economy with Toby Usnick. Please share your comments and questions with Toby via Twitter at TUsnick or LinkedIn at Toby Usnick. And thank you for sharing The Caring Economy with your friends and colleagues.